Esau has left the scene and he has left the land. He has moved his clan south and east to the land of Seir, which will be known as Edom. And Jacob remains now in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. And then a phrase that marks a new section in the book of Genesis is recorded for us. These are the generations of Jacob. We're not about to read a genealogy of names of his descendants, but rather that phrase marks a turning point in the story, a new focus, a new shift in the theme. And now the story takes up the life of Joseph, the 11th son of Jacob. And it's a passage in these first 11 verses of Genesis 37 in which we are brought face to face with hatred within the family of Jacob. And we're presented with the reason for the brothers' hatred. Now, there are three reasons that are given in this passage for the hatred of the brothers of Joseph towards him. The first one is that he is presented to us as a talebearer. We're told that as a young man of 17, Joseph accompanied four of his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, to pasture his father's flocks. The term there, he was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, is more properly translated, he was a helper with them. He was a kind of an assistant to his older brothers. But the story goes on to tell us that Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now, commentators are divided over exactly what this bad report was and whether it's a reflection of Joseph's poor judgment or not. Some are arguing here that Joseph is a storyteller, and that the report that he brings back of his brothers' behavior is actually an evil report, a wrong report, an untruthful report of them. Other commentators argue rather that the report that he brings back is a true report, and it's a report concerning his brother's wrongful treatment of him. Certainly the Hebrew can signify that the brothers have been unkind to him, that they have actually slandered him, and it's this evil report that Joseph brings back to his father. Either way, this report is one that causes his brothers to hate him. In the second place, he's hated because he has become his father's favourite. Israel, we're told, loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age. And we might add that he was also the son of his favourite wife. And he made him a robe of many colours. At least that is the way the translation has come down to us in most English versions. Some indicate that it was a richly ornamented robe. More properly, it probably translates as a long robe or a robe having long sleeves. Exactly how this robe looked, whether it was colourful, whether it was ornamented, either way, it was a distinctive robe. It stood out and it made Joseph stand out. The brothers understood this to be a sign of Jacob's greater love for Joseph than any of the other sons that he had sired. And so this message of favoritism brings to fruit the hatred in the hearts of Joseph's brothers. So he's a talebearer, as far as they can see. He's a father's favourite. And then the third reason why the brothers hate Joseph is because he is a dreamer. And the dreams do not look favourable to his brothers. Firstly, he has a dream in which he sees the sheaves that they have harvested and bound in the field, each brother's sheaf bows down to that of Joseph's. And the brothers immediately interpret the dream for themselves, and it's a dream that we know has a prophetic significance, and that their interpretation of it is in fact correct. They haven't wrongly judged the significance of this dream, but nevertheless, it doesn't generate love in the place of hatred, but rather confirms them in their hatred of their brothers. Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to rule over us? And they hated him even more for his dream. Well, certainly it seems with this first dream that the idea that he has of ruling over them is obnoxious to them. But then he has another dream. It's different, and yet it's the same. No longer are there sheaves, but now there are stars. And in addition to the stars, the sun and the moon, and all of these bow down before Joseph. And the second dream makes the idea conveyed in the first dream a certainty. It's interesting that in the book of Genesis and in the life of Joseph, dreams come in pairs. And in one later instance of this, we see the significance of the fact that there were two dreams when Joseph says to Pharaoh with regard to two dreams that he had dreamed in chapter 41 and in verse 32, that the dream, the doubling of Pharaoh's dream, means that the thing is fixed by God. It is definite. It is certain. So while the first dream may have conveyed to the brothers that Joseph had these grand and exalted ideas of his future, the second dream confirmed those ideas as being a certainty. And so not only now are they provoked to hatred of Joseph, but Moses tells us that his brothers were jealous of him. They saw that these dreams were significant. They saw that these dreams conveyed truth. And it was not a truth, it was not a message that they were particularly pleased to hear. And so these three reasons are given for the brothers' hatred. And of course, we'll discover why the hatred of the brothers is significant in the story of Joseph in the next passage that we'll be studying. This presents us with the background to the unfolding events in the next part of the chapter. Events that seem to us to be barbaric and yet were significant for the future of the people of Israel. Now the other thing that this passage teaches us is the sovereignty of God in the life of Joseph, or indeed in the life of all of God's people. John Calvin has said that God revealed in dreams what he would do so that afterwards it might be known that nothing had happened fortuitously. In other words, these dreams are presented at the beginning of the story so that at the end of the story we don't think that things just happened by accident, and that God just turned these things for profit for his people. No, these were the determined will and purpose of God for his people. He announced it beforehand in these dreams to Joseph, which were conveyed to his brothers and his father, so that these things may be confirmed and witnessed ahead of time. So God's sovereignty is being displayed through these dreams and what they foretold. But that sovereignty of God would also be a great encouragement for Joseph. He would have to endure many stories, many sorrows ahead of him. And this knowledge of his future advancement would have helped him to patiently endure what God called him to go through. Indeed, for all of us, the enduring of today's sorrows needs to be done in the light of tomorrow's promises, that the sufferings, the trials, the testings that we go through today lead to the joys and the rewards and the riches of the promises of God tomorrow. Indeed, Jesus himself endured the cross and despised its shame for the joy that was set before him. It was the knowledge of the many sons that he would bring to glory that enabled Jesus Christ to endure the sufferings that he underwent in this world. And so it was for Joseph, who in a number of ways prefigured Christ, is a type, a picture, a symbol of Christ. And so these dreams were presented to Joseph as an encouragement for him for the days that will lie ahead. But finally, in these dreams and in this story, we have a warning. A warning to us that the story of our lives is not to focus upon ourselves. The brothers were all wrapped up in themselves, in what was happening in their lives, and they didn't like what Joseph had to say about them. They didn't like what Joseph had to reveal about God's plans for them. They didn't want to be bowing down to Joseph, regardless of whether or not it was part of God's plan and purpose revealed in these dreams. No, they would do everything that they could to get rid of Joseph, to void these plans of God, because it didn't fit with their schemes for themselves. And this presents us with a warning that the story of history is a story about God's Saviour, not about us. Certainly for Joseph, he's in a formative position in the history of Israel, the nation through whom the Messiah will come into the world. We can see that the story of Joseph's life is very much the story of the Saviour's life. What happened to Joseph was of vital importance to the unfolding of the revelation of redemption in the world. And we may feel that our own lives are not as significant as that of Joseph's, and we're not part of the ancestry of the Saviour. What happens in our lives will not determine the coming of the Saviour into the world in any way. But it will determine the unfolding of the salvation of God in this world. How we live our lives, what we do with our lives, will have an impact upon the salvation of those to whom we speak, those before whom we live, those to whom we are witnesses. And this then is a warning to us that we must happily accept the role that God assigns to us and to others. The brothers of Joseph were filled with hatred and jealousy because of what God had assigned to him. A life they saw of royalty and command and authority. Little did they know what he would have to endure before that position was reached. They didn't want to be nobodies in the grander scheme, and sometimes we can be the same. We need to be happy and accept the role that God has given us, insignificant though it may be. Who knows what God's purposes are for us and how they will resolve themselves in the future. We must not wish for ourselves the roles of others. We must not wish that we were in another's place. God will use us. And it is better for us and better for others if we are happy for God to use us in his way rather than despite our uncooperativeness. Certainly, Joseph's brothers were used in the plans and purposes of God. They were used in spite of their hatred of Joseph. Indeed, God used their hatred of Joseph to bring about his purposes for Joseph and for the future of the people of Israel. But it is no commendation of their attitude or their behaviour, their actions, in the way that this story unfolds. It's a warning, therefore, that we should accept the role that God has given to us and gladly obey him and use our circumstances for the glory of our Saviour, for the extending of his kingdom, that others may come to know the one whom God purposed and sent into this world to save sinners, and who is coming again to bring that salvation to its perfect climax and to bring judgment to those who refuse to obey.